Today is Tuesday, August 3rd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, the U.S. pounds Taliban positions in Helmand province.
Endless war is going to get much worse, that we will see the onset of a true civil war, millions of refugees, lots of loss of life and bloodshed.
Plus, Israel approves third dose of COVID vaccine to citizens over 60 years.
The decision was based on considerable research and analysis, as well as the rise in risk of the Delta variant wave.
Also, renewed efforts to restore voting rights to convicted felons. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The U.S. Air Force has carried out operations to pound Taliban positions in Helmand province in the south, which has turned into one of the deadliest centers of clashes between Afghan government forces and the Taliban. General David Petraeus, the former U.S. commander for Afghanistan, has warned that Afghanistan is in danger of a Taliban takeover. The U.S. is set to leave Afghanistan by the end of the month. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Elshinawi has the details.
Fuad Aman, a spokesman for the Afghan Ministry of Defense, said Monday that the U.S. strikes on the outskirts of Lashkargah city killed a great number of Taliban fighters. This is the second time that U.S. forces have struck Taliban positions in the war centers in a single week. The first attack came in Herat province in the west, where the Taliban had arrived at the gates of the provincial capital. The U.S. military has launched more than a dozen airstrikes in the past week in support of Afghan government forces against the Taliban, a sharp spike over the previous 6 weeks, according to U.S. officials. The U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Reconciliation, Zalman Khalilzad, told VOA that the U.S. remains committed to promoting political settlement, stressing that neither side can win militarily. The U.S. and Taliban signed a deal in 2020 that would see the U.S. leave Afghanistan in exchange for the insurgents reducing violence and finding a negotiated end to the long-running war with the government in Kabul. Violence, however, has increased since then. The Taliban now control more than 200 of the 419 district centers and have made progress in cutting off some supply routes. In a discussion at the Wilson Center in Washington, General David Petraeus, former commander of U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan and former CIA director, reacted to the recent U.S. President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Petraeus said, "It is very important to distinguish between ending U.S. involvement in Afghanistan and the endless Afghan war, which is not happening."
In fact, I fear that the endless war is going to get much worse, that we will see the onset of a true civil war, millions of refugees, lots of loss of life and bloodshed, damage to infrastructure, and ultimately the return to control of much of Afghanistan to a medieval, theocratic, ultra-conservative Islamist regime, the Taliban.
In addition to the risk of the Taliban gaining ground, Petraeus also warned of the possibility of the Islamic State group establishing a sanctuary in the rugged Afghanistan-Pakistan border area.
Without question, extremist groups will be back. And of course, the Islamic State now has the Khorasan group, an affiliate of the Islamic State that is operating in the Afghanistan-Pakistan border region. They will seek to establish a sanctuary as well. We will have to keep an eye on that, to ensure that we keep tabs on the extremists and do continue to disrupt and degrade their capabilities as they reestablish sanctuaries.
U.S. Central Command says the U.S. troop withdrawal is more than 95% complete and it is to be finished by August 31st. Whether the U.S. will continue to provide airstrikes in support of Afghan government forces after that date is yet to be determined. Mohammed Elshinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani announced Monday that he has a clear plan to counter Taliban offensives across the country. As VOA's Aisha Tanzin reports from Islamabad, Ghani's government has been criticized for seeming to lack a strategy.
Amid what appeared to be inexorable gains by Taliban forces, President Ashraf Ghani said a new security plan will quickly change the situation on the battlefield. Ghani says, I want to tell you that a clear plan is prepared for reaching stability in 6 months, and the implementation of the plan has started. Ghani spoke before a joint session of parliament. The president only shared broad details of his plan Monday. The military is to defend strategic sites. The police will safeguard the cities. Meanwhile, Afghanistan's intelligence agency, NDS, is to coordinate armed public uprisings against the Taliban. The United States is preparing to withdraw the last of its troops from Afghanistan by the end of this month. This has been America's longest-running war. After foreign forces started withdrawing from Afghanistan in May, militants made unexpectedly fast territorial gains. They now control half of all districts and several key international border crossings. Ghani has asked members of parliament to help mobilize the population in support of security forces. He says the Taliban will not engage in meaningful peace negotiations until the situation on the battlefield changes. In a statement following Ghani's address, Parliament reiterated its support for the country's democracy, human rights, including women's rights and freedom of speech. Ghani's address comes at a time when the Taliban have increased attacks on Afghan cities, besieging several of them simultaneously. At least three cities, Kandahar, Herat and Lashkargah, have seen intense fighting over the last few days. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price Monday said Taliban are responsible for, quote, outrageous and atrocious acts of violence, unquote. Taliban fighters pushed deeper into the southern Afghanistan provincial capital of Lashkargah on Monday and closed in on government buildings, a senior official said, as the insurgents pressed a rapid advance. Heavy fighting was raging close to the National Directorate of Security, the prison, and the police headquarters in the main city of Helmand Province, the government official said, asking not to be named. Taliban fighters have moved in on three provincial capitals in the last few days and seized territory nationwide since Washington said it planned a complete withdrawal of troops by September. Most of their advances have focused on rural areas, and they have yet to take full control of a major city.
Other terrorist groups, ISIS-K, also active, but we have seen an increase in these ongoing Taliban attacks. They show little regard for human life, for the rights of the Afghan people, including the basic right of the Afghan people to live in safety and security. The targeted killings, the destructions of buildings, of bridges, other vital infrastructure, other violent acts against the people of Afghanistan, we recognize they are in stark contravention to statements from the Taliban leadership. We've seen from the loss of innocent Afghan life and the displacement of Afghans, the civilian population, it is the people of Afghanistan who suffer the most and who bear the brunt of these horrific attacks. The Taliban continue to engage in Doha. Any Afghan government will seek a few things. Number one is durability. It will not be Taliban's benefit. It would not be to anyone's benefit to have a government that is beset by civil war and violence.
That's U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price. The drive to restore voting rights for millions of convicted felons has gained momentum in recent years, creating large groups of new voters with the potential to influence the outcome of races in key states such as Florida, Iowa, and Kentucky. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports from Washington, D.C., one of just three places in the United States where currently serving felons can participate in the democratic process.
A familiar face in his neighborhood of southeast Washington, D.C., Corey Knight spends his days helping former felons rebuild their lives. The first step in that process, making sure those felons never lose their say in society.
Again, it's a human right issue. We all are human beings.
In 2020, Washington, D.C. joined Vermont and Maine as the only places in the U.S. where felons currently serving time behind bars have the right to vote. Knight, who led the voting rights restoration effort, says it's particularly important for people of color.
So the power of vote, which we see is in numbers, right? And that's what intimidates people, right? Because of people of color. There's a whole lot of us incarcerated. And so one of us, if all of us get together and vote, it's going to, you know, it kind of intimidates people. So they're trying to close our mouth.
Opponents say currently serving felons have given up their say in how society runs.
Individuals who are convicted of serious crimes and who are serving time in prison have shown that they are not willing to abide by the rules and laws that we have set up as a society. So why would you give them the ability through voting to decide what those rules and regulations are, ones that they say they're not going to abide by?
Most opponents acknowledge felons should have their rights restored once they serve their sentences and pay back fines, the current process in 27 states. But the process was anything but simple in Florida, where only a small fraction of the 2 million former felons could determine what they owed so they could pay their fines in order to vote.
As offensive as it was to me what the state was trying to do in terms of restrict the right to vote, what troubled me even more was that the state was unable to provide former felons an accurate answer as to how much they actually owed in terms of these fines, fees, court costs, and restitution.
Sokatme co-created Free Our Vote to provide felons with a database to learn how much they owed the state, providing 20,000 former felons with the ability to vote in the 2020 election in Florida. Back in D.C., Knight is working to restore rights in states with even bigger populations, New York and California.
We definitely want to assist in every way to make sure that we can help people of color have a voice and have their human rights back.
In the past two decades, half of U.S. states have changed felon voting laws, but more than 5 million ex-felons are still barred nationwide from voting. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The record number of migrants has crossed the English Channel this year from France to Britain in small boats. The British government is aiming to deter them by making it a criminal offense to arrive in a country without permission, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Across the world's busiest shipping lane, in overloaded rubber dinghies, dozens or sometimes hundreds of migrants are crossing from France to Britain to seek asylum almost every day. This group was filmed a short way off the British coastline last month, apparently having rowed the 30 kilometres across the channel.
Where are you from?
Sudan.
Sudan. You have no engine?
We don't have engine here.
You have enough water? You have something to drink?
No. Yeah. No. We just have a water here. We took it and...
The migrants come from many different countries in Africa, the Middle East and South Asia, most fleeing conflict or poverty. A record 430 people made the crossing in a single day last month. The total for 2021 so far stands at some 8,500, higher than the number for all of 2020. Speaking last month, Britain's Home Secretary said the government would take action to stop the migrants arriving.
What we're seeing right now, effectively people trafficking, smugglers, criminal gangs, exploiting our asylum system to bring in economic migrants and people that, quite frankly, are circumventing our legal migration routes, coming to our country illegally.
The spike in arrivals has embroiled Britain's revered sea rescue charity, the Royal National Lifeboat Institute, which has helped migrants at sea. Critics accuse the charity of providing a taxi service to Britain. The RNLI says it helps anyone in distress, regardless of who they are. The government is putting forward new legislation, which could see migrants who enter Britain without permission facing up to 4 years in prison. Bridget Chapman works at Kent Refugee Action Network, a charity supporting migrants arriving across the English Channel.
It flies in the face of international law. You know, the Geneva Convention states that people have a right to seek asylum, and it can be in a country of their choosing. It feels very deliberately punitive. It feels like saber rattling. It feels like a lot of tough talk to make people feel that the UK is not a welcoming place. The fact is that that's not going to stop people from coming.
A committee of British lawmakers last week strongly criticised the living conditions for newly arrived migrants in the port of Dover, with refugee children seen sleeping on the floors of reception centres. The local Kent authority says it can no longer cope with the number of arrivals. At the same time, Britain has given France $75 million to beef up policing of the northern French coastline to try to intercept migrants, on top of $39 million given by Britain last year. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, Samantha Power, is expected in Addis Ababa today to press the government to lift what the U.S. calls a blockade on humanitarian aid to the war-torn Tigray region. Meanwhile, a Sudanese official says local authorities in Kassala province have found around 50 bodies, apparently people fleeing the war in neighboring Ethiopia's Tigray region, floating in the river between the countries over the past week, some with gunshot wounds or their hands bound. The official said Monday forensic investigation is needed to determine the cause of death. The official spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to brief the media. Two Ethiopian health workers in the Sudan border community of Hamdat confirmed seeing the bodies found in the Setit River, known in Ethiopia as the Tekezi. The river flows through some of the most troubled areas of the nine-month-old conflict in Tigray, where ethnic Tigrayans have accused Ethiopian and allied forces of atrocities while battling Tigray forces. This is the Voice of America. NATO and the European Union are joining growing chorus of international condemnation of Iran's alleged attack on a merchant ship in the Arabian Sea. Last Thursday's drone strike on the MV Mercer Street killed a British national and a Romanian. It was the first known fatal strike on commercial shipping in the region after years of tensions over the tattered nuclear deal between Western nations and Iran. South Korea's spy agency says North Korea is releasing emergency rice reserves as the heat wave and drought worsen a food shortage. North Korea's moribund economy has been battered by the pandemic, and its food situation is expected to deteriorate further until the autumn harvest. South Korean lawmakers say the spy agency told them North Korea is sending rice reserved for wartime use to people with little food, laborers, and rural state agencies. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Israel has become the first country to distribute a third dose of COVID vaccine, offering the extra jab to anyone over 60. Israeli health experts say the effectiveness of the current vaccine declines with time, and the third shot will serve as a booster. The move comes as virus rates in Israel are on the increase. Linda Grandstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett announced the decision to offer a third vaccine dose to anyone over 60 who received their last shot at least 5 months ago.
The decision was based on considerable research and analysis, as well as the rise in risk of the Delta variant wave. Israel has already vaccinated 2,000 immunosuppressed people with a third dose with no severe adverse events. And now we're rolling out a national third dose campaign.
An Israeli study showed effectiveness of the COVID vaccine declined from 95% to 80% or even less against the Delta variant. Neither the U.S. nor the EU has yet recommended a third shot, but most Israeli doctors say they do not believe it will do any harm. Dr. Ashraf Shalmon of the Israeli Health Ministry said it is not yet clear how long even a third vaccine will provide protection.
It seems that vaccines are not sufficient to give a very high protective level for a very long time without maybe having a third dose. Now, a third dose could create another boost of time, which serves for 6 months, 1 year or not, or it could behave as we see in other types of vaccines, for instance, some hepatitis vaccines and some other vaccines like papilloma, where a third boost usually creates a long-lasting immunity.
Israel has also brought back its Green Pass regulations meaning residents will have to show proof of immunization or a negative coronavirus test to enter many public places, including concerts, restaurants, and gyms. The decisions come as infection rates in Israel continue to rise, with more than 2,000 new cases reported each day. The percentage of COVID tests coming back positive is now more than 3%, double the rate of just a few weeks ago. Israel was a leader in the vaccination campaign, and more than 60% of the population has received at least one dose. Now Israelis hope a third dose will enable them to deal with the Delta variant. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Analysts and activists alike are demanding that rampant corruption, which has eroded Lebanon's governance system, be uprooted, supported by the United States, the European Union's recent adoption of a new sanctions regime on Lebanon's corrupt players is seen by observers as one way forward to tackling the endemic problem while pressing for the formation of a new government. For VOA, Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
The U.S. Secretaries of State and Treasury Antony Blinken and Janet Yellen welcomed the EU's new sanctions targeting corrupt figures in Lebanon. A joint statement on July 30th said the United States looks forward to future cooperation with the EU in our shared efforts. Mona Yacoubian of the United States Institute of Peace told London's Chatham House Research Group that targeted sanctions are important, as is government formation and systemic reform in Lebanon. She notes that power broker Hezbollah and other actors are able to exploit weak institutions.
Sanctions that seek to address those particular members of the political class who are most corrupt and who are obstructing the need to form a new government include things like travel bans, asset freezes, and so forth. If it's more of a concerted effort by the U.S., the French, the EU, and even Gulf countries, that may yield what Lebanon desperately needs right now. Any policies that assist the Lebanese with building strong, accountable, transparent institutions. Those policies are the most potent antidote to corruption and also allow for significant counterweight to Hezbollah.
Besides being a militant group, Hezbollah is a political party with lawmakers in parliament. Yacoubian warns that Lebanon is undergoing a slow-motion implosion and urges the West to ramp up support to the Lebanese armed forces. She says it remains the one state institution standing between where we are today and total chaos. Recently, telecoms tycoon Najib Mikati was designated as prime minister and tasked with forming a cabinet of specialists to carry out reforms required by the international community to unlock badly needed funds for the crisis-wracked country, something that dogged his predecessor for nearly a year. Questions remain as to whether he will be successful in forming a cabinet. Meanwhile, anti-corruption activist Bedri Maiouchi told Chatham House that Lebanon's civil society is working together to press for laws combating corruption in several key sectors, with a draft law on public procurement on the table. But he stresses that ultimately a change in how Lebanon is governed is needed.
Whichever laws we look at in the anti-corruption kind of arsenal of reforms, you cannot expect those who benefit from the system to change the system. It's time to wake up. This ties to one of the key recommendations is that we need new leadership in this country. This leadership is corrupt to the core.
Writing in the Saudi Arab News Daily, political commentator Baria Alamuddin warned that if we allow Lebanon to continue fragmenting, it opens the door to catastrophes of an infinitely greater magnitude than the port explosion. This disaster must be our wake-up call for inaugurating a new Lebanon. Alamuddin calls for collectively banishing those she describes as having colluded in Lebanon's downfall and who remain wedded to a medieval and inherently corrupt sectarian system. She says citizens should unite to rebuild a secular sovereign nation rooted in the rule of law and justice for all. Del Gavlek for VOA News, Amman.
The White House says the U.S. has shipped more than 110 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines to more than 60 countries, ranging from Afghanistan to Zambia. President Joe Biden was expected to discuss that milestone and more Tuesday in remarks about the U.S. strategy to slow the spread of the coronavirus abroad. The president's announcement will come amid a rise in infections in the U.S., fueled by the highly contagious Delta variant of the virus. Biden has promised the U.S. will be the, quote, arsenal of vaccines, unquote, for the world. But the 110 million doses donated largely through a vaccine program known as COVAX represents a fraction of what is needed globally. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good evening.